Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
And
KSJE, Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Big Picture Science.
Big Picture Science steps back to get the wide-angle view on science and technology.
So think big. Big Picture Science, Saturdays at 8 a.m.
on KSJE, the information and cultural beacon of the Four Corners.
Minutes past 8 o'clock. It's Thursday morning, the second day of May, 2024. Good morning, everyone. I'm Scott Micklin. Thanks for tuning in to KSJE. We're at 90.9 FM, of course, broadcasting to all of San Juan County, New Mexico. In Durango, Colorado, you can find us on the dial at 103.3 FM. And if you're anywhere else on the planet, say, for example, maybe, Tucson, Arizona, you can always listen from our website at ksje.com. I also want to welcome our viewers this morning who are joining us. The video of this program is streaming on the KSJE Facebook page and also to our YouTube channel. So welcome aboard, everybody. I'm so glad that you are with us today. Our focus is on archaeology. It is our regular visit with my guest, Paul Reed, of course, from Archaeology Southwest, and also a colleague of his, Shannon Cowell, will be talking about a special program that they are involved with about archaeology and saving history across the United States. That's coming up in the next few moments right here on KSJE this morning, so stay tuned for that. Then later on this morning, we'll be checking in with the Aztec Museum in Pioneer Village. They are underway, celebrating their 60th anniversary year. Lots of exciting programs and exhibits and other things planned. We'll get a little lesson about what's going on there coming up today at 8:50 a.m. on KSJE. Then, of course, Mick Hess is going to take over the Studio A. He'll take us roving with the arts at 9:06 after the news. A reminder, you can connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, and also on our Instagram page in addition to Facebook and YouTube. And if you're a podcast person, we invite you to subscribe for free to KSJE Podcasts. They're available wherever you're already probably listening to podcasts, so check it out and maybe discover a new local program that you may have missed recently. Outside our studios here at San Juan College, it's a sunny Thursday morning, 47 degrees at the moment. We're expecting a lot of sunshine today, 66 for a high in Farmington, 40 degrees tonight. It'll be sunny and a bit warmer tomorrow with a high of 72 on Friday, 74 by Saturday. The forecast calls for a windy but sunny day on Sunday with a high of 71 and a low of 41, and maybe a sunny day on Monday but much cooler with highs only 57 degrees early next week. I'll be back with my guests from Archaeology Southwest right after this on KSJE.
Humans still have an edge against AI when it comes to...
KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center. The caregivers of San Juan Regional Medical Center are committed to bettering the quality of life, health, and care of individuals, families, and our communities. Life is their sacred trust. Better is their mission. Here is their home. San Juan Regional Medical Center, improving the health of the Four Corners since 1910. And back in Studio A this morning, as I mentioned, my guest this morning from Archaeology Southwest, Paul Reed, is joining us this morning. Paul, always good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Scott, my pleasure to be back on with you.
Thank you very much. And your colleague who is joining us as well this morning, Shannon Cowell, who is the BIA Collaboration Director and Preservation Archaeologist at Archaeology Southwest. And Shannon, I don't know if you can hear me, but we seem to have lost your video. Are you still on the line? We may have lost her, Paul. So I'm not sure what happened.
Okay, yeah, I can hear her audio.
You can. I'm not getting that. Shannon, if you can hear me, maybe try to reconnect with us if you don't mind. But we will continue on with the live show. Sorry about that, but let me see what I can do here on my end to try to get her back. But the reason that you are both with us this morning is to talk about a really interesting program, of course. And Paul, you and I have talked about the importance of preserving these archaeological sites across North America and elsewhere, and working with local entities to be able to do just that. And so that is kind of part of it. There is Shannon Cowell. She is back with us. Sorry about that, but there now we can see you. And I think we can hear you, Shannon. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Technical problems notwithstanding, it's nice to have you here. So thank you. As I was mentioning, the focus this morning is on this program that you are very involved with, Shannon Cowell, about saving history. And Save History is the name of the program. And you've been working on this now with Archaeology Southwest for how long, would you say?
Almost 5 years. It's part of the ongoing work of the BIA's ARPA assistance program. We're a collective of archaeologists and law enforcement allied with tribes to help protect cultural sites from looting and vandalism.
Got it. And it seems like those collaborations are really instrumental to the success of this program, wouldn't you say?
It's really true. It's up to tribes how they want to protect these sites, which sites to prioritize. We work together with tribal historic preservation offices and law enforcement to come up with the best solutions to protect these places.
And to have the government also as a part of these conversations and planning, I guess, and I guess strategies of how to protect these sites, that's got to be an important piece too.
Yeah, it's been interesting learning more from all sides involved, how people want to allocate resources, what the priorities are, et cetera.
Very good. And Paul Reed, I want to come back to you a little bit because you and I have talked about the importance of involving local governments, tribal governments, indigenous people in some of these conversations. And it sounds like this program takes that into account.
Yeah, it absolutely does, Scott. You know, this is a Bureau of Indian Affairs, or as Shannon said, BIA program. And I think it really is one of the first of its kind in the country. Because, you know, BIA, of course, has been in existence a long time and has managed things for tribes at various levels. And through the years, BIA has been trying to turn over more of its functions where appropriate to tribal groups, you know, through self-determination and the like. So this program is particularly important because it's making a good amount of funding available to tribes directly and through our organization to address, you know, these grave threats to their heritage with pot hunting, damage to rock imagery, you know, and just vandalism in general on the sites that are sacred to these groups.
Right. And I was just going to ask you that it has to be noted that Archaeology Southwest is a major player in this, as you mentioned, and you're kind of helping to maybe funnel some of these funds or direct some of these funds to places where through the work that you all do every day, you can kind of see where maybe the need is most greatest. Is that kind of how it's set to work? Is that,
yeah,
I don't, that's
Scott,
a question,
you know, like
for Paul. Go ahead.
At other points, we have a fairly unique role, Archaeology Southwest does, in working with the federal agencies. You know, in Shannon's case with BIA, Bureau of Indian Affairs, I work a lot with the National Park Service. And then what we're helping those parks and agencies do is connect to tribes to get tribes involved in the management, direct management of their own heritage resources. You know, in the case of Shannon's program, really addressing issues that have come up, you know, through damage and destruction and that those kinds of behaviors. So I think it's really huge in terms of the government partnering as directly as possible with tribes to address these needs and concerns.
Right. Thank you. And Shannon, looking at the report, of course, on Save History, it talks about just the massive numbers, I guess, of reports of looting and vandalism on public and tribal lands. I'm going to quote from the report that we have here. Between 2009 and 2018, more than 4,000 instances of looting and vandalism on public and tribal lands. And this is something that we see sometimes in the news and just maybe see it if we're out and about. But it's an all too common of an occurrence, I guess, on our tribal and public lands.
Yeah, that's true. And it's hard because we don't have a central repository. No one's really tracking these issues. So a lot of it, this data has been collected through surveys and anecdotes. We really need more data collection so we understand the problem, where it's happening, how often it's happening, because that would help us prioritize our efforts as well.
Right. And I guess many times, too, maybe they're not always reported right away unless there are witnesses, obviously, or something like that. It may be months or years before maybe another hiker or group comes upon a site that's been looted or vandalized.
Right. This is a problem as well. So only a fraction of these incidents are reported. A smaller fraction are actually investigated. And then an even smaller fraction are prosecuted. So on safehistory.org, the public can report any incidents they see of looting, vandalism, theft. We have an online reporting form and a hotline, 1-833-TIP-END-LOOT. Sorry about that.
Right.
So people can call that and report. We really want to encourage people to let land managers and law enforcement know when they see these things.
Sure. And is it your goal, I guess, maybe then to have or build some kind of repository on all these reports that are coming into to this program then?
Yeah, we're getting more and more every month. Really good reports, you know, with photos and locations. Always take safety in mind, too. You don't want to interact with people necessarily. They may be dangerous. So we're tracking these things more and more as well.
Got you. And I hear if you're witnessing, I guess, some illegal acts, you're saying to be careful for folks, right?
Right.
Yeah, very important. And certainly there are laws on the books against these types of things, and there are penalties, right, if someone is found guilty of vandalizing or looting one of these sites. What types of penalties are we talking about? Paul Reed, is that a question for you?
I think Shannon can actually address that better. Because she deals, I think she's dealing directly with a couple of those cases.
Shannon, let me pose the question to you then, if you don't mind. The penalties?
It varies state to state, but the Archaeological Resources Protection Act does have allowance for felonies, and most cases are felonies. It's really easy to reach that threshold. And a lot of our Indigenous partners want prosecutors to take these crimes more seriously, take the punishments more seriously as well.
Got you. And that's a federal offense then, right?
Right.
Got it. And again, looking at your report and quoting some of the statistics from the report, 90% of all major archaeological sites in the Southwest have been looted and vandalized. More than 70% of cultural items sold at overseas auctions were affiliated with Southwestern tribes. And 80% of looting incidents go unreported for the probably the reasons that we talked about, right?
Right. There's just really a bottleneck. We need more reports, people to take responsibility when they see these things happen.
Right. And that item about these items that are sold overseas, and so I guess the next question might be, is there some outreach happening with some of these foreign governments and police agencies in other countries where maybe some of these things, these looted items are being sold for profit to try to get their cooperation as well?
Yeah, we've been working really closely with the Bureau of Indian Affairs Cultural Resource Unit, which was just started a couple years ago, and they're dedicated completely to cultural resource crime. And they do a lot of work with auction houses overseas to bring back especially sacred items. And they've had some really big success stories like the Acoma Shield. They were involved with that repatriation.
I remember that. I remember Paul and I talked about that when it did happen. And so that's great that they are at least open to having that conversation and maybe realize the importance of being able to try to repatriate some of these things back to the Indigenous tribes where they are coming from and were taken maybe illegally, right?
Right. And I think a lot of auction houses, collectors are starting to come around and understand that these are really harmful acts. Theft and looting is what happens on the ground. But collectors and the market for these items are really driving that demand. So really getting to those folks and helping them understand that this is theft, it's grave robbing, could lessen that demand and reduce looting and vandalism on the ground.
Right. And do you think that word is getting out maybe even slowly to some of these folks that maybe the markets, the auctions that they're going to are trading in stolen property and these things should be returned?
I think so. We're trying to do that work with our Safe History campaign. You can look at our website and find us on social media. And I think that this issue has gained a lot of traction over the last couple decades. people are more aware because of the Archaeological Resources Protection Act that this is a crime and that it's unethical.
Right. Very true. Paul Reed, let me come to you and ask, with your interactions with some of the tribes, are they seeing some of these efforts and appreciative of some of the efforts to maybe get some of these items that are taken and then sold at auctions overseas returned? Remember, we talked about the Yakima Shield, and so I would assume that's one of the good examples of this.
Yeah, Yakima's had some success recovering some sacred items. You know, a good friend and colleague, Octavia Saltewa from Zuni Pueblo, you know, makes a couple of trips a year to overseas locations to be part of repatriation efforts. So, you know, like Shannon said, I think the awareness of this is slowly increasing. And, you know, Scott, we've talked on the show about sort of the danger of collecting different ethnic groups' cultural property and then sort of removing it from context and treating things, you know, purely as art. And, you know, all of us worldwide and across the U.S. can appreciate beautiful items that reflect great artistry, you know, at many different levels. But I think if we strip too much of the context and the culture that's tied to the objects from that, then we end up in this situation where we're sort of just objectifying the pieces, the items, and we're not understanding how important they are fundamentally to the different groups that produce them. And so, you know, with the awareness of that increasing, you know, certainly through the archaeological ranks in our country and museum ranks and worldwide, I think that's helping. You know, as Shannon said, the collector side is a little more difficult because, you know, people in that realm have some different concerns and they don't always understand these issues. So, you know, the education side is huge. And I know with Shannon's program, that's a big component of what they try to do.
Right. Very good. Thank you very, very much. Part of the report, too, talks about the cooperative agreements that we've mentioned, too, between the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the BIA, and Archaeology Southwest. And again, Shannon Cowell, I imagine you couldn't do a lot of what you're able to do without some of these cooperative agreements and without the BIA kind of having your back a little bit as you go forward on some of these things.
Yeah, the BIA has been instrumental. They've started this program over a decade ago, and we just ended our first five-year cooperative agreement with them and started a new one. So we've got at least 5 years ahead of us of continuing this work, and they've been really great about providing funding, and oftentimes they connect tribes to us, so they'll kind of funnel requests our way when damage happens on the ground.
Very good. And so their commitment is solid for the future, I guess?
Yes, definitely.
Very good. Thank you very, very much. My guest this morning, as I mentioned, from Archaeology Southwest, Paul Reed is with us, and Shannon Cowell. We are talking about the Save History program, a program that Archaeology Southwest is headlining with help from other indigenous and local governments and also the federal government with the Bureau of Indian Affairs or the BIA to protect and look after some of these very important sites across North America and elsewhere. And we've been talking a little bit about some of these things. Again, displaying on our video streams this morning a little bit of a map of where you are working, and Shannon, this kind of shows, I guess, the extent of the sites that are in need of protection all across the, I'd say, western half of the continental U.S.
Yeah, we've gotten requests from tribes all over. I'm headed to Alaska and Washington later this month to help out with some damage assessments. Most of our work in the past has been concentrated in the Southwest. I think a lot of the sites are targeted here because of the types of items, the, you know, really remote areas where people can kind of do clandestine digs illegally to find items. So most of our work in the past has been in the Southwest, but we are increasingly getting reports from outside. We also do trainings. We've got one coming up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, looking at another one in Montana later this summer. So we're traveling a lot and spreading the word.
Right. Well, and we know we have a lot of sites just in our proximity here in the Southwest. So I guess that might be part of it, too, is just the vast number that are here as well. When you talk about some of the damage assessments, what does that come from? Is that just from vandalism or construction or inadvertent damage?
We've actually gotten a lot of those cases of inadvertent or negligence during construction. We've also worked on looting cases that are more straightforward all over Arizona, especially. And basically, I come in as an expert to assess and document the damage and then assign values, which is kind of an interesting process. It's not something they teach you in school at all. I've had to learn the methods from other experts. And this is all becomes part of the investigation provided to the prosecutor.
I see. And so is that, I guess, from what you're saying, maybe give me a little more information about that. Is that trying to maybe weight some of these things as to their importance or the severity? How would you describe that?
Yeah, we look at archaeological values, so the cost that of the scientific information that would have been obtainable if the damage hadn't occurred. We look at commercial value, and we looked at the cost of restoration and repair, which can include backfilling, stabilization, ceremonial treatments by tribes. So it's pretty comprehensive, but unfortunately, it doesn't really acknowledge cultural value by or from Indigenous people. So that's something we should think about in the future.
Got you. And that would be another maybe layer to this process, I suppose?
Right.
Yeah. And with that, then, it sounds to me kind of like you're trying to come up with a, I don't want to say necessarily a triage state, you know, a process, but to be able to kind of rank these things of how to provide resources and protections and things like that, depending on maybe how important these sites are or these artifacts are?
Yeah, it definitely helps us figure out what to do. We want to restore these sites. That's something we've been working on more and more, putting up signs or fences, removing graffiti. So that helps us figure out what the next steps are and what tribes want to help protect the places.
Got you. Very interesting. And going back to your report, using technology to try to also identify some of these things. And again, Paul Reed, you and I have talked about the use of technology in your work, about ground penetrating radar and satellite imagery and things like that, that maybe gives you some idea of what's going on under the ground from a larger perspective, maybe up in the air, so to speak. The image we're showing on the screen right now is talking about some remote sensing technology and this SAR technology, synthetic aperture radar, to show some of these things. Technology, I guess, can be very helpful in some of these investigations as well. Shannon?
Yeah, this is still kind of a pilot program, but we're looking at change detection to detect ground surface disturbance, vehicles, other changes at a site to help us, you know, react more quickly when looting or vandalism or damage happens. We've also been working on a forensic sedimentology project, which basically matches dirt from a tool or an object stolen from a site to the site itself. So that really helps us close that loophole. Because looting is technically legal on private land. So a lot of people will say things came from private land. But if we can match sediment to sites on public or tribal land, then that helps us build our cases.
Interesting. And I'm amazed to hear you say that there's a way to do that, right? That there is sediment that can be so studied, I guess, that you can pinpoint its location maybe to determine this?
Yeah, we're working on publishing hopefully later this year, but they use this kind of technique in murder investigations and other kind of on the ground outdoor crime scenes. So we're basically just proving that this works in archaeological resource crime as well.
Very interesting. Paul, I'm making a note for a future show. I hope you are too, but that sounds really fascinating to me. And Shannon, could this technology, I guess, kind of work here in the Southwest? You mentioned that, you know, we have a lot of reports of vandalism and incidents here, of course, because it's so remote. Is this a way that maybe you could also determine if dirt's been changed or vehicles have been in an area recently to be able to kind of investigate if you think something may be going on from some of the satellite or other type of technology?
Yeah, I'm hopeful, especially in the next few years when that satellite technology improves and we get better resolution as members of the public. I know like the military has some really high grade resolution, but once we can use that, I think we'll be able to detect these issues on the ground faster everywhere.
Right. And Paul Reed, again, because you and I have talked about this in the past, using some of this technology to help in your just run of the mill work that you do, which is not really run-of-the-mill, but it's something that you do day in and day out. Are you excited about some of the prospects with these improvements?
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. You know, and as you said, we've talked about the intersection of new technologies and methodologies and bringing those to bear, you know, in the type of investigations Shannon and her teams are doing, but also just to better understand sites and contexts where, you know, we're fortunate not to have immediate threats. And, you know, of course, the use of drones is huge in this as well, because we can do mapping and, you know, what's described as photogrammetry with drones now and get a tremendous amount of work done. So I think there's probably an application for the drones in looking at damaged sites in Shannon's program as well. So we're definitely, you know, always looking for the next technological advance to be able to make what we're doing more efficient and really just learn more.
Right. Good point. Thank you, Paul. Shannon Cowell, can you give us an idea of drones being used in the work that you're doing? I imagine they would provide some pretty good views and vantage points as you're maybe looking at a site.
Yeah, definitely. Every time we visit a site, we do take some drone aerial imagery. So that's been really important to help us document damage. It can help document changes over time as well, so we can prove that damage is new. And we also use LiDAR technology, which can be combined with a drone, and that helps us calculate the volumes of damage. So how big the hole was, how big the back dirt is, et cetera.
Got it. And so what's next, I guess, would be my next question for you, Shannon Cowell, as we have our remaining moments together this morning. You are working on these projects all over. You mentioned you're traveling to Alaska shortly for some work up there. What does the next 6 months, 5 years look like for you?
We'll be working more on our outreach. We're working on a short documentary, interviewing a couple of really experienced law enforcement folks who've worked on ARPA cases and worked on interagency task force to investigate these crimes. We'll also keep working on training, so we'll plan probably three more for next year, all over the Western US. And we'll keep being available to help people out when these issues happen. So I expect we'll get more calls to help out with damage assessments.
Right, very good. And there's a lot more to your report than we're able to cover this morning, but I thank you for sharing that with us today. Again, on the screen is kind of the other phone numbers and other websites that you mentioned this morning. If folks do see a site that has been vandalized and or looted, they can report that to your organization, correct? That phone number is the 1-833-END-LOOT.
Right, and we route these to law enforcement and land managers as needed. So it's not just limited to tribal land. Any public land is covered as well.
Got you. And the website savehistory.org.
Right.
Got it. And it's a really interesting report. Lots of things to read and learn about this program and the work that it is doing. And again, it's really important giving voices to some of our native governments, native groups, indigenous people as well in this process. So thank you for your work with this.
Thank you for having us.
You bet. You bet. Paul Reed, to wrap up our conversation this morning, again, great work. Still talking about, again, the impacts of archaeology and the discussions that you are reaching out to have with other groups that really share the land with the work that you're doing.
Scott, you know, as we've talked over the months and years, we're in a transition in archaeology as a whole and at Archaeology Southwest, and really putting advocacy and close collaboration with tribal and native groups really much more in the forefront of what we're doing on the land every day, every week, every year. So it's really exciting. And I think Shannon's program is breaking a lot of new ground with those collaborations, addressing these issues. The other thing Shannon and I talked about yesterday was work that she's done to go in and restore areas that have been impacted. She was talking about repairing a rock imagery site with a great team of different tribal participants. And so that's really a very positive aspect of the work that she's undertaking.
Very much, very much. Well, again, thank you for bringing the information about Shannon's program and this program to our audiences this morning. Shannon, again, thank you for being a part of the program, and much continued good luck with you. And as the program continues to grow across North America, that we can try to save some of these really important sites and involve some of these important groups to it as well. So thank you both very, very much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My guest this morning from Archaeology Southwest with me here on KSJE. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.